Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Money, fame, and power. For many, that pretty much sums up what life is all about. Yet, what happens when a man achieves all those things, yet can only marvel at how empty his life is? That was the extraordinary place where the journey of Ken Mansfield took him. It's a trek that features stops at some of the most memorable musical moments in modern history. Yet the destination of Ken's story is a relationship with Jesus. Ken Mansfield is the former U.S. manager of Apple Records, as well as a high-ranking executive for several other record labels. He's a songwriter, the author of 5 books, and a Grammy and Dove Award-winning album producer. He's also an ordained minister. So, Ken, it's tremendous to have you here, sir. Thanks for doing it.
Thanks for having me back, Ron. I'm glad to be here.
And I need to ask you how you're doing today, how things are going for you. And you mentioned that down in Florida today, unlike here in the Midwest, you have some temperatures in the mid-60s, correct?
Yeah, if you want to bring it up, I don't want to start ruining your day here. Yeah, we just dropped down to 66 degrees, and we're kind of a cold spell. But we'll just, you don't know what that's like.
That's all right. That's all right. We appreciate you being here, and we don't begrudge you some good weather today, Ken.
Okay.
Now,
I deserve it.
Now, I want to talk first off about your latest book, the newest addition to the works that you've penned. It's called The Rock in a Hard Place. And you feature some amazing stories of redemption from folks who were part of some of the formative bands of this era, including Kansas, Buffalo Springfield, Collective Soul, and Ozzy Osbourne, just to name a few. But how did you come to the idea for this book, Ken, and why did you want to get that message out?
Well, you know, it's funny because the message is important, but I didn't really want to write this book. It made me relive a lot of things, and, you know, when you have to go back to the past, because like all the people in the book, I kind of started out innocent and then ended up in the business and had success and then gotten a real dark, you know, spent a real dark time in our lives and tragedies and things falling apart and the decadence. And then, of course, we all came out in the other end and met our father. But to relive it, I just wasn't really anxious to go back there. But I had a gentleman I'd worked with before that had worked on my Beatle books and things with me, and he just kept saying, "You know what? You got to write this. We got to do this." He said, "If you'll tell the stories and stuff, I'll work with you on it, and I'll help." You know, so. Finally, he talked me into it. He's been after me at this for years. And I said, "Well, here's what I'll do." And his name is Marshall Terrell. He's a very well-known biography writer and things. And I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll just talk to a couple of people, some of my closer friends, and if it feels good, we'll do it." You know what, Ryan, I started these interviews, and it just the whole thing just took off on its own. Boy, it's like I had a tiger by the tail. I just went from story to story, and people would just pop up, you know, "Oh, yeah, you should talk to, oh, what about him?" You know, and I go, "Oh, gosh, yeah, you know, I know, we'll talk." it kind of just got away from us in a way. It just got so incredible.
As you mentioned, I mean, the stories of many of the folks that you profile do segue with your own life, and it seems to be a common theme in many of those stories, and I think of the one you tell of Shane Evans from Collective Soul, that sometimes God needs to bring us to our lowest point before we can see our need for him. Is that a fair interpretation?
That's totally true. In fact, in my case, I just said, you know, God loved me so much that he knew I had to go broke so I could be broken. So it looked like most of us had to go to a very bottom. I mean, really a deep, dark bottom. And the only person who could pull us out of there was God. And I make a point that you know, we're not any more saved than anybody else. But I think just the contrast is so incredible between, you know, where we were and then when we're redeemed. The contrast is so striking. It's just, I think we almost feel more blessed in a way.
Yes. That was a very powerful moment, I thought. And you said that right at the open of the book, didn't you, where you made the comment that when you've especially chased after fame and so many things that are fleeting, that when you've found something that endures, salvation that lasts, as someone who's lived that lifestyle, it really means something to you, doesn't it?
It really does. And the great thing about being Christian is it's very simple. I mean, it's just so simple. When you're going through the other things, your life is so complicated. Whether you're into the New Age things, you're into the drug culture, or just Jesus Christ is Lord. And as I say, either you believe him or you don't. You know, so that makes life real simple for me. Either I believe or I don't. Either I believe that the Bible is the holy word of God and every word he says is true. And, you know, gee, that's really simple. And then just go from there.
That's the voice of Mr. Ken Mansfield. He's an author, speaker, and award-winning music producer. And his latest book is called Rock in a Heart Place. And I want to segue back. You mentioned a common theme of beginning in small towns and heading into the music business. Of course, that's your story. Lewiston, Idaho, right, was where it started for you?
Yeah, I actually was up in the Idaho Panhandle, not far south of the Canadian border.
Okay.
I know cold weather, too. I'm not the only people that know cold weather. very simple. Lived on a river in a sawmill town, and of course I couldn't wait to get out of there. I was 17 years old. I was out there. I was on my way to California. Nothing's stopping me. And I didn't care how I've been brought up or what I've been taught, man. I was coming to California.
when you refer to what you were taught, I mean, did you have a faith growing up?
That is, you know, we're talking about common threads. Most of the people in the book had some kind of faith upbringing, and a great share of them had the same thing I did. Is it was so hellfire and brimstone, it was so scary and just so rigid that most of us just couldn't get away to shake it, to get away from it. You know,
sure.
I mean, I grew up in the church. I was there every time the doors would open. I was in the choir, vacation Bible school, all the service, Sunday school, the whole thing. You know, and I got my name, my Bible with my name on it for learning verses, and sang in the choir and all these things. But yeah, I never saw that pastor smile once. And I would walk out of church every Sunday and be so scared. I knew I was going to hell before I even got home, because I knew I was going to mess up somewhere along the way.
Sure.
And so when I left home, I just saw, why do I have anything to do with that, man? I'm leaving home and I'm getting away from that stuff. I'm going to start enjoying my life. You
sure.
know?
Now, you make the journey from that faith and obviously travel far from it. You made the journey away from Idaho as well to California. And of course, one of the real headlines of your biography is running Apple Records in the U.S. for the Beatles. And you've explained that being a part of that phenomenon was a matter of being in the right place at the right time. So how did you come to know them and to be the guy they looked to head their efforts here?
I interviewed a real long shot to get a job at Capitol Records for the job that most people wanted. That was the head of promotion out of Los Angeles, out of Hollywood. And, of course, that's where all the stars were. That's everybody was there. So when the Beatles were on tour in 65, my job was to work with all our bands when they're on the road. So when they hit town, that was my job. Now, I'm a young 20-some-year-old guy, you know, that's kind of really hip, and I have the Cadillac convertible and house in the Hollywood Hills with the pool. And basically, I was everything that they had kind of, you know, looked at when they were growing up, going, wow, wouldn't that be fantastic? And I have a big enough ego that I just thought I was a bigger deal to say. And so they were really, in essence, in a way, as fascinated with me as I was with them. They talked funny and they dressed funny and really funny guys, you know. And so the thing is, I've been willing to admit, is I was not a big fan of the band. I mean, they were just, it was another band that I had to work with, but gee, they were such cool guys. And we just hit it off. I think the main thing is because I wasn't in awe of them, so I wasn't falling all over them. And I could talk to them because I wasn't. And they were just really just open with me, and they'd want to, you know, John wanted to know where Mulholland Drive was, and one of them wanted to know where Roman's Chinese Theater was, and Ringo wanted to know if I could introduce him to Buck Owens, because Buck was on Capitol Records, and
sure.
Paul wanted me to get him some Gene Vincent records, because Gene was on the record, you know, when he was live. And it was just this kind of, you know, young people, exciting things. And so when they left, I could just tell something happened. They came back the next year. I thought, well, they'll never remember me. They got off the plane. Hey, Ken, how you doing? And away we went, you know. And so when they decided to set up Apple Records, they had to have somebody run it in America. And that was the most important market for the thing. And they happened to know a record executive there. And by that time, because this was like 3 years later, man, I mean, I was on, you know, one of the top executives in the company. So they asked for me to come over to London. And we finished setting up the label, and I set up the launch in America because that's what was important. And I became the U.S. manager of the label. But the best part, Ryan, was I became their personal liaison. It was an unofficial title. I didn't get paid for it. But if Paul wanted to sneak in the country, or John saw a pair of sunglasses on some ad, and he would call, and I was supposed to find them on the Sunset. And George, Patty Harrison wanted to come in the country and go shopping, so I took, you know, it was just the things like that, you know, that made it really special. It went beyond the business relationship.
Yeah, makes for some fantastic stories, I imagine. That's the voice of Mr. Okay. Ken Mansfield. He's an author, a speaker, an award-winning music producer. His latest book is called Rock in a Hard Place, and he's written some excellent, excellent books. The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay, one of those. Stumbling on Open Ground, another. You know, as we talk about your experience with the Beatles, and one thing that really struck me in looking forward to talking with you is just how universal it seems that an enjoyment of their music was and really still is. And from your unique perspective, I mean, that's pretty extraordinary, isn't it? The way it crosses genres and decades. I mean, how was it possible, and what was unique about that band and perhaps the times that allowed that kind of greatness to happen?
The core of their success was their innocence. And out of that innocence came the fact that these were four uniquely talented guys. And the Beatles couldn't have been the Beatles if it wasn't those exact four people, because they kind of offered their innocence. And, you know, they came along during a pretty troubled time in our past with the assassinations and all the trials and tribulations going on at that time in the world and in America and stuff. And they just delivered the people kind of out of the doldrums they were in. But those four guys, there was just a chemistry, and each one of them satisfied something for somebody. That's why people, Ringo is my favorite, or Paul's my favorite, or something like that. There was just the band itself, but they were incredibly talented. The music was crafted so uniquely, and I personally think that as the centuries go by, that they will be equivalent to the Tchaikovskys and Rachmaninoffs of the past of our time, because their music is translated into bluegrass, into classical, into, you know, funk. It just adapts to everything.
You really were living the high life in that period. At number one records on the charts, a movie actress wife, a beautiful home, But then, Ken, you essentially lost it all. And how did you come to find yourself in Nashville in a scenario where, as you've described it, you couldn't get a job in the mailroom at companies that you used to run?
Yeah, well, you know, when God had his hand on me that whole time. He had his hand on me during the decadent years and the success years. And I thought it was because I was such a big deal and I was so smart. He had placed me with the Beatles. Here I come off with Indian Reservation lands in Idaho, and then next thing I know, you know, a few years later, I'm up on the rooftop with the Beatles. I mean, that had to be something pretty... anyway, that was God's plan. That's all I'm saying. And so the decadence had a reason, too. Not that he enjoyed that, but... as my wife said, when she met me, I was really a mess. But she wanted to find a man that had been down there, down on the bad part, and had been through it and come out of it, and would know what it really was, so I wouldn't be returning to it. I already knew it was a dark place, and I would never want to go back there. You know, I'm a minister now, and I found that I have really great street cred when I talk to young people and people in the music business and people who are kind of out there. It's kind of like they go, well, gee whiz, if this guy was at the Beatles, and he says Jesus is cool, he must know what he's talking about. So maybe I should check this out, you know?
In that time when you were in some real difficulties in your life, that your wife came into your life and you just began to explain why and how she was able to draw you towards God. How did she do that, and how did God really begin to draw you to himself?
My life had fallen apart in Los Angeles, and I lost everything, lost my home and servants and all my toys. And so I bailed out to Nashville because I was a producer to Waylon Jennings and the Outlaw Movement. And I thought, well, I'll just go back to Nashville where I had such great success as a producer, and I'll just start over again, or, you know, just pick up where I left off. Well, the doors were closed. For some reason, I couldn't find a job in L.A., and I couldn't find a job in Nashville either. And gee, it should have been a breeze in Nashville, but the doors were closed. Anyway, I get off the plane, and I think, I'm just going to get crazy down here like I used to before, more drugs, more partying, more everything.
Sure.
And within 3 days, I met this young lady at a restaurant, and I was with my engineer. I was going to be working with at the time, and we just looked at each other, and it's just one of those great old stories that just something happened. So we dated. And here I was, a stoner. I was broke. I had a bad reputation. I was just, you know, about everything that she would never be looking for. She had spent the last year, she had made the decision a year ago that she was in drug, get closer to the Lord than ever before. She quit dating. She was just really pressing in, you know. And when she walked in the restaurant, she, like, lit up the place. But we just, I don't know, and why we would date, because she shouldn't had no business being around, that's for sure. But there was an attraction, which, again, this is God just riding, you know, shotgun on us, just putting us together. But
yeah.
So now I have a guru at the time, and she's pressing into the Lord. And so we would have these conversations, and she'd say, Jesus is the way. And I said, you know what, he is. Well, he's a way, you know. He's one of the paths to the top of the mountain. In fact, he's one of the great ascendist masters. You know, this Jesus guy, you're right, he's great. And she said, no, he's the way. And I said, well, he is the way. I agree that he's a pretty cool guy. He said, no, he's the way. And we would get into some pretty heated argument over that. And so I told her, I said, look, we got to resolve this. Can't we just meet in the middle of some place? You kind of lighten up on the Jesus thing. I'll even change gurus for you. And let's just find a place in the middle. And she said, there is no middle. Jesus is the way. Anyway. One night, she called and said, I need to talk to you tonight. I said, okay. And so we got together, and she said, I can see where we're headed. I see how our relationship is deepening. And she said, I cannot become unequally yoked. And she said, so I have to make a decision between you and Jesus, and I picked Jesus.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, I about fell back, because I knew how much we cared about each other. We had so much in common. It was just such a great relationship, other than that one little Jesus thing. So when she said that, now, Ryan, she had been trying to minister to me. She was taking me to the contemporary Christian rock concerts.
Sure. Time
where, like, it was Petra and Rich Mullen.
Yeah.
And she was taking me to the church, because a lot of the Christian musicians played in the worship band. So she'd take me to churches, had the good worship, you know, and she would pray for me. But that's what she was talking the talk. But when she did that, she walked out her walk. And I never had anybody do something that was so monumental to me. I thought, I know how hard this is for her to do. And she's walking out her walk, and I have never wanted something or believed in something so deeply that I was willing to give up something I really cared about. And that turned the corner for me, because everything she'd been, you know, ministering to me about kind of started falling in place. But when she did that, I thought, I want to have something that means that much to me. And so it was just a matter of, I don't know, probably weeks before I was, and then when I was in, man, I was all in. I didn't read anything except the Bible for 3 years. I mean, as far as I didn't read books or newspapers or anything. I had to do a little catch up here, you know.
Wow, that's amazing. That's an amazing journey, an amazing story. And Ken Mansfield is with us here on the Road for Faith Radio. And our conversation is going fast, as I expected, with so many good stories that it would. But you've been through so much, including health struggles, a rare cancer.
Yeah.
Where are you at with that right now, Ken? How are you doing, and how can we pray for you going forward?
Well, yeah, you can pray for me to keep on going. I had incurable cancer. Was told I had 1 to 3 years to live, and when they told me that, they said, by the way, we think you've had it for 2 years, so that meant I had 1 year. But then they said, you're just going to get worse. There's no cure, and you're just going to get worse, and you're going to die. And then they said, by the way, there is this new experimental treatment, and if you're willing, we'll go ahead and try this on you. And it worked really good. The cancer is still incurable, but it's dormant or whatever because of this treatment.
Sure.
And when I was diagnosed, it was 1996, so it worked pretty good. So I thought, wow, man, you know, and I was a Christian. I stayed close to the Lord on it, and then, bam, I got hit with a cancer that was so brutal and so painful and so horrible. I never dreamed anything would be so hard to go, and the radiation and the chemotherapies and all that kind of stuff. And that one was, the other one was a little easier. It was a little bit more subtle than that, but this one was just, you know, all or nothing. You didn't know if you were going to make it or anything. And I just told God when I saw what was happening, I said, Lord, I'm telling you right now, I am committing to you that I'm not going to bail on my belief. I'm not going to get mad at you because this is pretty horrible. I'm not going to blame you. I am staying with you and believing in you during this. And I'm saying this to you because if I make a commitment, if I make a deal with you and I break a deal with God, I'm in big trouble. So I thought, I'm going to, and I tell you what, there were times that, oh man, I told him I wasn't going to bail. So
yeah.
I'm hanging on. But anyway, so I went through that one. And I came out a little weaker, of course. You don't go through that many cancer battles and treatments, stuff like that.
But right.
Many years go by, and I'll be darned, last year I had a stroke, and I was just stunned. And I'm doing pretty good, though. I went on the road again the end of last year, some really, you know, major churches and television, and God gave me the strength to do it, and so I'm back at it.
Well, that's great. And we hope that you'll continue to be for many years to come. You got an amazing story and a lot of hope and a lot of redemption to share, Ken Mansfield. I wonder, as we say farewell to our all too short time together, what is the heart and the vision that really continues to drive your ministry, and what keeps you out there on the road talking and writing these books?
It's because I have a unique testimony, and I can identify with people. It seems like I'll go into large churches where there's been a powerful pastor there for many, many years and done so much for the kingdom, but I'll come in and I'll just kind of fit into a crack. Maybe, you know, he hasn't had the experience or the background I've had, or it's just something that's very different and very unique. And especially in the New Age thing, I spent 10 years in the New Age just as a teacher and practicer and the favored chela, a major guru and all that. And I can sit down and talk with guys that are really into the New Age thing, because you couldn't have talked me out of it when I was into it. So I know where their heads are at. And that's just like a special little side ministry that God's given me. Connie is with me when we travel, and she's mentioned in my talks, and afterwards, we'll have so many women and young girls who ever come up that are dating somebody that's not a Christian, that's very troublesome to them. And so here's Connie with this little side ministry, you know, afterwards. She's always got a group of people talking to her afterwards. And I just like the uniqueness of it and how God's used me. And to see people come to the Lord like I was. People who never, I've had people come into a service to see me just because they knew I was a Beatles guy. They just wanted to meet the Beatles guy, and
sure,
they walked out saved. I mean, my gosh. You know, talk about God having a sense of humor.
Amen.
There you go.
Before we say farewell, I want to make sure and give you the opportunity to talk about how people can learn more about your latest book, as well as some of the other great books you've written in the ministry that you continue to do. Is there a website or a number they should call to learn more?
There's either K Mansfield, the letter K, Mansfield.com, or MainMansfield.com, M-A-I-N, Mansfield.com. And that takes you to my books, and it takes you to my ministry and a little bit of Beatles stuff in there, too.
Well, sir, thank you so much for taking the time today, for sharing your incredible journey. We really do appreciate it, and we wish you the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I was glad to talk to you, Brian.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.